This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, live in the studio, the world-famous Dr. Harry Greenspun.
Great to be here, Chuck. Quite an introduction.
Every time I see, where's he been led? Italy, Africa, Brazil, Japan. It's like, you know, we caught him at the airport here, and we sent a big guy over there, drag him into the studio, and say, you sit here for an hour, and you tell us about healthcare IT. Dr. Harry Greenspun is a senior advisor for Deloitte's Center for Health Solutions. Is that right, Harry? You have so many titles, I don't know what to say anymore.
That is the place. A little bit of a tongue twister, but eventually we get it.
Great. I wrote a blog post about 6 months ago, and the title was, A Digital Health Strategy is More Than Just a Doctor with a Smartphone. And here in the studio, we have a doctor who also has a smartphone, and we'll find out if digital health strategy is more than just a doctor with a smartphone. But before we begin, can you tell us a little about your background, please?
Sure. Born and raised here in Maryland. I'm a cardiac anesthesiologist. Was at Hopkins and got involved in health IT back in the early 90s, and I've been involved in health IT and the really transformation of healthcare using technology for the last decade or so.
And ladies and gentlemen, he's not wearing an Armstrong wristband. He's wearing a Fitbit. What is that anyway?
This is actually a Nike Fuel band, but I have a Fitbit as well. And my dog even wears a tag activity tracker. So all of us are well monitored.
Well, did you read the news on Friday about the Nike announcement with that Fit? Is it the Fuel, Nike Fuel? Is that what it is?
It is Nike Fuel, yeah.
They're getting away from that market. And this is one of the topics we're going to talk about is mHealth and the Internet of Things and all this data that's flowing in there. You know, there's so much bad news about healthcare IT. I like to focus on the good news and talk about technology and mobile and what companies are doing to help people, you know, reduce costs for healthcare and improve their health themselves. And I think that's the whole focus of the program today. Let's jump right in. That little thing you got in your wrist. Mobile health. The FDA is kind of moving into the world of mobile health and devices. Tell us about, put this in framework for us, the whole idea of FDA and what they're doing with mobile, please.
Well, it's interesting. So, you know, the government tries to desperately keep up with innovation, which is a hard thing to do. And there's been so much work in health IT and new technology and wearables and others that the FDA a couple years ago decided they were going to start figuring out what their role should be. And very recently, a working group, which an FDA advisory group, got together and they've come up with sort of draft recommendations where they've trying to give some guidance of how the FDA might regulate IT. And they divide them up into three categories. There's this health administration software, which is sort of the baseline kind of thing that runs people's systems and not the sort of thing that would warrant regulation. At the highest end is medical device software, which is really used for diagnosis and treatment and really is in line with what the FDA would consider a device and therefore warrants regulation. In between, there's this funny space of health management software, which includes decision support and other types of things. And you know that is a tricky area for some. For most organizations or most innovative companies, it's not the kind of thing that the FDA would regulate, but it's certainly something they would view with some scrutiny. So there's a public comment period opening up shortly, and I think we'll get some further guidance pretty soon.
In the NFL, there's something called encroaching, and you encroach on a 300-pound guy. I'm never going to do that, but obviously they have a lot of encroaching. So does this come under the category of encroaching? Are they kind of elbowing their way in here?
Well, you know, FDA is, you know, one of their charters is to make sure that, you know, people are kept safe. And if you think about, you know, software that's designed to diagnose cancer or to look at pathology or to regulate your pacemaker, you know, the FDA probably has good reason to make sure that people are safe.
Apple has 97,000 health apps on their app store now. Isn't that amazing? I mean, I can't believe that.
Well, you know, when you say health apps, I'm always fascinated by that, because when you look at the majority of them, most of them sort of live in the fitness and wellness space. And you talked about my Fuel Band and the Fitbits before. You know, and related to the regulatory aspect, a lot of times the you know, we see companies stick in this fitness and wellness area as a way of avoiding regulation. And so we got a lot of really cool stuff out there. You can monitor your sleep. You can monitor your activity. You can monitor your posture. You can monitor your stress. You can monitor all sorts of things. But it's actually not connected to, you know, your electronic health record, not connected to sort of mainstream healthcare. And they're also not connected to each other. So we've created lots and lots of tiny little silos of information. You know, that's, you know, as great as a lot of these things are, that's going to be a big challenge to really mine some value out of them.
I'm a lot older than you, Dr. Greenspun, and I remember years ago they'd have these modems that were 288 modems, and they got faster modems, and people talked about pipes in the internet, and they talked about, you know, a big pipe, a little pipe, and everyone talked about, you know, a garden hose and a fire hose. And it seems to me that with all these apps out there, all these devices like the one you're wearing, we can take and say, guess what? If there's 5,000 people like you wearing all this data, I mean, it's a fire hose of data, isn't it?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of data coming in, actually. And John, I am old enough to remember, you know, that, you know, the 14.4 to 28.8 shift. That was a really exciting time for me. But yeah, there's a lot of data coming in from lots of different sources. And the question is not really, you know, what should we do with this data? The question is it valuable? So, you know, for me to track, you know, my activity moment to moment, or for me to track my heart rate on my bike computer, does my doctor want to see that? No. But if something changes, right, I should be alerted to that. I should know that something different's going on. Or if I could take that data and combine it with a sleep monitor, I could look at my supermarket loyalty card and see that how is my exercise and my diet fitting together relative to my weight or some other issue. That would be valuable.
My wife has a Fitbit, and she monitors all that kind of stuff, her steps and all that craziness. And there are some people of different political persuasions that may be wary of this data getting out there. And I think there's some initiatives on Capitol Hill. There's a Software Act, there's a Protect Act for protecting some of this information. I mean, this is where it gets kind of fuzzy. What silo do I put this in? What bucket do I put this in? This is tough.
Yeah, it's a great question, because one of the interesting things is that you know, on the healthcare side, you know, more than 50% of Americans have something in their medical record they don't want to share. People are very concerned.
Really?
Oh,
well, I'm not telling you about my foot problem.
Well, but it's interesting. It's not like in financial services, where people are worried about losing their identity and giving their bank account strained. People are worried about discrete pieces of information in the medical record. You know, it's a rash they got in Vegas or some other issue that happened.
Oh, they apply for a job and they find out, oh, he's got a bad back, we're not going to hire him or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, they're worried about discrimination related to really isolated piece of information. Now, you contrast that with a lot of these wearables right now, is that the power in these things is actually in the social aspect. People are very willing to share information. They compete with each other. It's motivational. So at some point, we're at the collision between the two, where if suddenly, you know, you're very willing to give up your information about your activity monitor, you may be less interested in sharing information about your inhaler or your pill bottle or your blood glucose meter.
You know, I think with physical fitness, what I encourage my kids to do is to set a goal, write it down, and then tell their friends. And then all of a sudden, so you can do that marathon. Well, what if Dr. Greenspun? And you tell you, so you know, we're almost forced into doing it, aren't you? It's social motivation.
Well, you know, my wife tries to get me to exercise more, and I can't tell if she wants me to live longer or to die suddenly. what we found is, you know, if you think it back at the early days of the pedometers, right, people would wear a pedometer for maybe 2 weeks, but the magic of the numbers would wear off after that. It's really the social aspect that has created a lot of the power. And if we in healthcare can start leveraging that with not just healthy people, but sicker folks, people with chronic diseases, then we have some ability to start making a dent on these really serious issues in healthcare.
It's almost like crowdsourcing. Crowdsourcing is almost like friend sourcing, and everyone's trying to encourage you to be healthier and complete your health goals. I think it's maybe the flip of crowdsourcing. Huh?
Yeah, and again, you know, when you think about many aspects of people's outcomes are related to their own behavior, and if you know, we'll see orthopedic surgeons putting these kind of devices on their patients to make sure they get enough exercise after a joint replacement, and they'll be introducing to other patients, of course, with appropriate privacy protections. as a way of making sure that actually they get better outcomes.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, talk about a new leader over at the ONC, more on wearable devices, and maybe advanced analytics applied to healthcare. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have the world-famous Dr. Harry Greenspun. He is with Deloitte. He's with the Center for Health Solutions. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500. I'm glad the FCC didn't hear the break because there was some terminology used by certain persons. It's not acceptable in the radio station, but we're not going to get there. What I want to talk about is some new acronyms and new abbreviations. You know, in my world of marketing, we have B2B, business to business. And there's also B2G, business to government. And there's also a B2C, business to consumer. But I think in healthcare, and I think this Internet of Things, it's got something called M2M, which is machine to machine. And so now we have devices like you're wearing communicating to other devices unbeknownst to you.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think that's also one of the powers that we have with a lot of technology is that, you know, just about every device that goes into a person or on a person or around a person now can communicate and can produce data in one way or another. And again, we have a really interesting opportunity here to use this data and use the interaction, you know, to get something valuable. You think about, someone with diabetes, they could monitor their exercise, they could monitor their blood sugar, they could monitor their diet. They could also control their insulin pump and do a number of other things. If those devices could communicate with each other effectively, then they'd have an opportunity to make a real impact. Struggle with, you know, for a lot of people is they have all these devices, but they don't talk to each other. There's no interoperability.
Yeah, and I think that's a key point for the new ONC director, isn't it?
Yeah, and so Karen DeSalvo, Dr. Karen DeSalvo, has replaced Farzad Mostashari as the ONC.
A lot easier to say.
Well, no, Farzad is like Cher. You know, all you have to say is Farzad, and I introduced him that way one time, actually on Capitol Hill, like only request just Farzad. You know, Dr. Salvo has said that interoperability is going to be a big issue. And this really is, you know, there's been a recognition that interoperability is a big challenge. And if you were at the ONC's big meeting a couple months ago, there was an announcement of this new Center for Medical Interoperability that's being launched, which is actually being run by providers hospitals as opposed to by vendors.
Is it a physical location or just
I think
virtual?
they're determining the location now, it's a collection of healthcare providers who are, you know, like other industries have gotten together and saying, hey, we have certain needs. We need to solve this problem of interoperability because, you know, several years ago, interoperability was an issue around medical records talking to electronic medical records. Now it's an issue of can your EHR talk to your infusion pump? Can it talk to your CT scanner? Can it talk to your home monitoring device? And on and on.
6 months ago, we had Dr. Louis Sullivan sit right there, and he said, 20 years ago, he had a dream of interoperability just between software. I don't think he could have even dreamt of someone like you on your bicycle with your wrist thing and communicating back and forth. It's exploded.
Yeah, and it was interesting. So the opportunity has exploded, but the issue has been around for ages. I moderated a panel not too long ago where we had a guy from the financial services industry said, same with the banking industry had to deal with interoperability in the 1800s around bank check routing numbers to figure out, you know, what bank wrote this and who should get money for it. Because they recognized that they had to deal with their customers. Their customer needs was they needed to get their money where they were. And so healthcare has got to sort of address that. You've got to you've got to give the people the data where they have it and where they need it.
Yeah, there's a whole branch of history that studies history from coins, because coins had to be interoperable and what coin would go where. This is nothing new under the sun. We know that for sure. You have a very popular tweet feed, don't you? How many people are following you now?
I think we're somewhere over 12,000 or so.
And it'll be
At Harry Greenspun, very original of me. It's been interesting how that Twitter feed has grown and how the followers have grown. And we've been very systematic about it to make sure that we're providing some quality information.
Well, I got up early this morning and I read your past 500 tweets. And I went to one. It was something called the Deloitte University Press. And I said, I didn't know there's a university named Deloitte University. What is the Deloitte University Press?
Well, they're two different things. So there actually is a physical Deloitte University.
Is it really? It's like Hamburger U or something?
No, it's a very large facility in Dallas, Texas.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's kind of like a cruise ship without the fun. It's a lot of state-of-the-art meeting rooms and a tremendous amount of food. You can't walk more than 100 yards.
I'm gone. gone there. I'm gone.
Oh yeah, but we do a lot of training there, and we bring a lot of clients there to and others to do special seminars. But one of the things we also have is Duluth University Press is actually a publishing arm, which puts out some of our best thought pieces and. Really has some very good stuff on it.
You know, a lot of my listeners may listen to this 6 months from now when there's snow on the ground or something, but they're looking for information and they may just want to know about managing mobile devices, managing security for mobile devices, maybe just managing security for mobile devices on the Android platform, and they can get that detailed information at that this press cancer. I mean, there's a lot of really detailed articles there.
Yeah, tremendous amount of stuff there. And actually, one of the great places people can go is to Deloitte.com/Center for Health Solutions, which is a good clearinghouse of all of our research and connections to other thoughtware that's out there.
I used to always read Wired magazine until it got to the point where it was like 10 pounds and throw out my back. And I read it online. February 2014, there's an article about mobile devices. And the emphasis of the article is that employees today demand mobile solutions. I mean, that's your world?
Yeah, well, you know, and healthcare is the same way in the sense that, you know, people live in the real world, you know, to have a cliche about it. But it's one thing to be walking around with your devices and have your tablets and everything else and then walk into an organization which is 20 years behind the time. It gets very frustrating for people. You know, we know these things exist elsewhere. So we started to expect this from our employers.
I had the pleasure of putting on an Oculus Rift. Have you ever put one of those things on? It's a 3D like device.
I used to work for Dell, and we got to see some of the stuff before it came out. So years ago, I was wearing a very large set of 3D glasses. But it's a real style. I've seen your photo, Jonathan. It's a real style statement.
Finally, John looks good. It's amazing it's all covered up. I've had some guests on the studio from California. And in California, they're pretty up to speed with a lot of high technology thing. And when you are in a Tesla. When you're a Tesla,
yes.
And you have Google Glass, there's a certain word for you. And I think the listeners can figure out what this word is. But it's always fascinating with the devices and people classify people in different ways here. So we have a challenge in the area of interoperability. We have a lot of mobile devices out there. I guess the question is, there must be conferences. There's a big conference every year. What, 5,000 people show up for this mHealth conference in Maryland. Is that right?
Yes, the mHealth Summit has grown year over year. And mHealth Summit is actually now part of HIMSS, which is the enormous health IT conference and organization. And what's interesting, so, you know, I go every year, I usually speak every year, and it has grown from a conference largely populated by vendors, sort of trying to sell stuff to each other, to we're now starting to see, you know, sort of the success stories of organizations that are, you know, getting some results from mHealth, Kaiser Permanente being one of the big ones right now that actually invested heavily in mHealth. And so they're coming to these conferences to talk about lessons learned, successes that they had. So, you know, I think we're starting to see, you know, the real turning point in mHealth.
When you look at mHealth and interoperability is a phrase that popped up and I was reading about it this morning. It's called patient ID matching. Where does that fit in? What does that mean anyway?
Well, patient ID matching is a really challenging area. And one of the things to think about is, you know, who are you? Like, are you John Gilroy? Are you Jay Gilroy? You Jonathan Gilroy? So if I go to look you up, it may be very hard for me to figure out who you are. Now, an easy solution would be, let's just give you a unique number, sort of like your social security number or others. There's legislation that actually prevents the development of a unique patient identifier. So as a result, what we have to do is instead of having everyone have a unique number, we have to figure out kind of probabilistic ways of figuring out, hey, which John Gilroy is this?
Oh, so that's what it is. It's like if it matches a similar place of birth and age, probably going to be that fellow. If not,
and you know, for someone like a Harry Greenspun, right? It's not too hard to, you know, to figure out which Harry Greenspun. For, you know, for a John Smith, that can be a big challenge, and it can be a frustration. It can also be can lead to errors as well, in the sense that if, you know, we pull in allergy information from the wrong patient, or we fail to bring in information from the correct patient, it can result in error. So it continues to be, you know, a frustrating area in the health IT world, and ultimately, you know, a question of patient safety.
So if Dr. Karen DeSalvo wants people to move to electronic health records, I guess one of the underpinnings of that is that, hey, let's make sure it's the correct person in the electronic health to begin with.
Well, of course, by law, she'll be forbidden from doing some of that. So she's going to have to find ways to promote it. And there has been call for sort of looking at that legislation again, saying, you know, when we first thought about that we were very concerned about privacy and security in a way that was different. Maybe there's a new way we can address this. And so I think we're going to start seeing some more activity on Capitol Hill around that.
Let's take a break. We can come back, talk more about big data and maybe advanced analytics and how to apply some of all this data we're collecting to actually improving health. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, Dr. Harry Greenspun. He is a senior advisor for the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Live in the studio, world famous Dr. Harry Greenspun. We grabbed him off an airplane. We put him in this chair. He's going to go out in 10 minutes and fly off to who knows where.
Straight from Omaha.
Straight from Omaha. He's a senior advisor for Deloitte's Center for Health Solutions. We're talking about all kinds of different things, everything from the ONC leader to mHealth to big data. And let's go back to this garden hose, fire hose thing, and then the big pipes and the internet. And people talked about that years ago. I hear less and less of that because I guess this high-speed data is everywhere. But we have all this data coming in, and so I give you a little bucket of information. I fill up your bucket. Well, now what?
What's fascinating now is that we've been very focused on healthcare information and what's in electronic health records, what's in our personal health record, in those areas. And then we're gradually come to the realization that, we know a tremendous amount about people unrelated to healthcare. And, it's one thing for me to closely monitor someone's cholesterol readings and look at their labs. It'd be a whole other thing for me to predict their risk of heart attack if I could look at how often they ate fast food. So if you start looking at people's credit card records, and this is the type of information that's available via marketing services. You can see where people shop, where people eat, what they do. And you can actually run risk assessments of their risk of heart attack, their risk of discontinuing medication, their risk of obesity, their risk of diabetes, risk of depression. And so there are a lot of interesting things that we can find out about people that really impact their health that have nothing to do with the traditional health data we normally collect.
So now, if I apply for a job at the ABC company, and they use these advanced analytics to find out, well, look at this guy Gilroy. He's at Mickey Donald's, and he's smoking cigars, and may peck my job, the chance of getting a job, huh?
Yeah, so use of this information is very, very sketchy, very, very difficult.
Yes, this is the appropriate word, sketchy.
Very sketchy. And what's fascinating is that it raises all sorts of privacy concerns, and rightly so. What's interesting is that, there are a lot of industries that are now saying, hey, if you share some of this information with us, we'll give you a discount. We'll save you $20 a month. We're seeing this in the auto insurance industry as one of the first areas where, people are willing to put a device in their car that monitors their driving. So how fast do you accelerate? How hard do you brake? What time of day do you drive?
Right? Mayfield Heights, Ohio, Progressive Insurance Company. We know it well, huh?
Yeah. And for many people, it seemed like a big invasion of privacy. For a lot of people, hey, look, I'm a good driver. I got no reason to worry about this. I should get credit for being such a good driver.
This is a lifestyle then, huh?
It's a lifestyle thing. So for example, if I'm, if I say I'm healthy, right, and I say I exercise, well, maybe my insurance company or my employer said, well, okay, prove it. Like, share your data with us and we'll give you a discount. Yeah. Or if I have diabetes and I'm very conscientious about monitoring my blood sugar, monitoring my diet, I think I ought to get some credit for that. And we now have data that can actually help support that. So I think we're going to start seeing a movement in this area of utilizing this sort of data to do a lot of good.
A personal anecdote, my wife demanded that I get a big life insurance policy, and I wanted to get a discounted rate. So I'd have a doctor come out to the house and actually weigh me and blood test and everything, and they gave me the cheapy rate because I guess I'm okay or something. I had to prove it, didn't I?
Yeah, what's interesting now is that we actually have good data that shows that no one actually has to come to the house. We don't need to draw your blood. We don't need to do a lot of things. We can actually look at this lifestyle data and get a very clear image of who you are and what your risks are. So, for example, if you see that if you buy a hunting license every year and you're refilling your scuba tanks and you've got a frequent, skydiver card, right? Maybe that's not the kind of stuff that shows up when someone does an EKG and a physical at your house.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle issue. There's a fancy word out there. It's called ICD-10. I think it has a big impact. In IC9, there's like 14,000 codes. IC10 triples that or something. Just give us a brief perspective of what this is all about.
Yes, yeah, so this is the most techie thing we've talked about all day.
We've got the audience, you got to talk a little bit.
So for those who don't know, ICD-10 is the coding system that's used for billing for every single procedure that's done. In the past, it was the list of diagnoses, and it was about 14,000 things. Now it's up to, and you name the number, it's an enormous increase. But it helps do a lot of things. It helps you very carefully identify, what limb was operated on or what was the cause of this. And it's been ridiculed a bit. For example, there's injury as a result of a killer whale or, injury.
That's one of the codes.
One of the codes was for killer whales. Another one for a turkey incident. There's a difference.
Incident.
Yeah.
My wife hit me with a drumstick.
That would be a different one.
That's different category.
Yeah. No, you'd have to be pecked by a live turkey to get this code. It was a very big deal, and it was supposed to be implemented in October of 2014, and lots of healthcare organizations were spending a lot of time upgrading their systems. It's sort of on par with sort of the Y2K upgrades of systems. It was very expensive, very costly, took a lot of training. And then just a few weeks ago, in the SGR fix, there was sort of a surprise piece of legislation which delayed it for at least another year. So right now the industry is sort of scratching its head thinking, is it going to be in 2015? Is it going to be beyond? Is something else going to change? We did a poll. We did a webinar right after it happened. We polled our members, and most of them were our attendees. Most of them were actually very disappointed. They thought they were ready. They'd geared up. They'd made investments. But there's still a large percentage of the country and the hospitals and providers who need the extra time, and it was valuable for them. So it's a lot of mixed feelings about this one.
What's SGR, please?
The sustainable growth rate. This is the doc fix of to avoid cuts to Medicare payments to physicians. So another contentious thing. And so this little piece of legislation around literally a single sentence got stuck in there and caused a big uproar.
So, Dr. Greenspan, I'm going to ask you a question. So let's say my daughter gets on a plane on August 1st and moves to Nigeria, and she stubs her toe and has to see a doctor. Is that all going to be ICD-10? Is that popular outside the United States and not inside? Or where's that fit in the whole international environment?
So it's fascinating. ICD-10 has been actually adopted in most of the world for some time. And so the United States is actually behind most of the world in its adoption. So, and what's interesting is that what's coming next, of course, is ICD-11. And there are people saying, well, maybe we should wait for ICD-11 because that's coming around in a few years.
Wow.
The ICD-10 implementation has already been delayed twice before. So there's a question of, is it going to be delayed again? So maybe we should actually wait around for ICD-11. But the bigger picture is that, we've got to get good data on what goes on in healthcare, no matter where you are. We have to understand what happened to people in a much more meaningful way so we can apply the big data, apply the analytics to it to improve healthcare globally.
January this year, a local company called Meritoc did a survey of 150 federal executives who focus on healthcare IT and asked some questions about big data. And I'll just toss out some of the findings and you can comment on them. One of the benefits of aggregating this big data from the healthcare perspective is to track and manage population health. All of a sudden, that seems like a valid concern, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, population health is in some ways a new buzzword, but it's really something we have to do. Our healthcare system has been very much around a fee-for-service or a volume-based reimbursement system where doctors and hospitals got paid for the amount of work they did as opposed to the quality of the work they did and the outcomes they achieved. And so it's really about how do you manage the health of population? So I ask people, does your doctor care about you? And people say, sure. I go, well, is your doctor thinking about you right now? And no. And it's really, unless you're in front of a physician most of the time, they're really not thinking about your health care. And when we think about population health, we think about using big data and other systems to say, hey, who of my patients out there hasn't gotten their screening colonoscopy? Who needs to get a flu shot? Who hasn't? Who's on a medication that just got recalled or has some sort of safety notice? How can we alert them? Have a much greater focus on prevention, using big data than we have.
So is I guess the end game in marketing perspective is to change behavior for a consumer. So in your world, it's change behavior of a consumer, of a patient. And so if a patient can get involved in improving their healthcare, you win.
Well, it's interesting, you know, the issue of patient versus consumer, and, you know, patients are really only patients when they're in front of a physician, as opposed to the rest of the time, they're regular people, right? They're making choices, right? They're where they eat, what they do, whether they smoke, whether they exercise, and whether they wear their seatbelts. And then those choices actually impact their health. And so finding ways to engage them more in their own healthcare, get them more interested, is a challenge and something healthcare has not done very effectively compared to other industries. You look at the airline industry, hotels, you know, even supermarkets and drugstores are very good at getting people to do stuff. And, you know, we talked earlier about wearables. I mean, the fitness industry has found people to exercise, something that most people just don't want to do.
In fact, the big rumor in my world is a little company called Apple maybe making a move into this area of the Internet of Things and just doing a body slam and just wiping everyone out. I'll have to see what happens in the next 6 months, or maybe it'll be the next secret announcement from Apple. Let's take a break, get back, talk more about healthcare IT. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Dr. Harry Greenspun. He is the Senior Advisor for Deloitte Center for Health Solutions. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We have Dr. Harry Greenspun in the studio for the next 10 minutes before he flashes off to go someplace, who knows, Malaysia, India, who knows where he's off to.
Winnemucca.
He's a senior advisor at Deloitte Center for Health Solutions. And we've been talking about healthcare IT from just every single possible angle. We're talking about the new ONC leader, talk about mobile devices, the rumors of a new iPhone-type device in the area of the Internet of Things. Back to this survey from January about the benefits of big data. Another benefit, I mean, surprise, improved patient care from big data, really? I guess that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you'd be surprised at how, you know, number one, and if you think about prior to electronic health records getting more widely adopted, it's pretty unusual for people to actually get high quality care. There are dramatic variations in care from provider to provider. So, you know, using data to understand, you know, who's getting good care, is it based on any kind of scientific evidence? So evidence-based care is something very important right now to understand how people are doing it. What's interesting, when you ask consumers about healthcare quality in our own survey of the consumers, what they typically respond with is issues around what the service experience was like, what it was like to go to the doctor. No one really says, hey, based upon my age and my medical history, I have all the preventive care I'm supposed to get. They really talk about, you know, the office staff was nice, the appointment was on time, the doctor listened to me. And all of us know people who've, you know, stuck with a doctor despite some very bad outcomes.
They like the doctor.
They like the doctor.
Personal.
And it's not until they have a bad experience at the office that they actually consider switching.
Well, a good experience is to follow your Twitter feed. My Twitter feed is at Ray Gilroy. What's your handle again?
It's at Harry Greenspun.
And all kinds of, I tell you what, you know, I was talking in the break about the amount of information. It's a fire hose of information. I mean, topic a topic a topic. If you want to follow a certain topic, you can just follow. And the Twitter feed is just, it's very practical. I think for anyone involved in this industry, it's a good little tool to keep in your toolbox. My toolbox has a top 10 list, and I ask 10 questions to every guest in the studio. And everyone from Vince Cerf to Jimmy Wales, everyone had Vivek Kundra, they all have to answer these questions. And they change every now and then. I'm going to ask these 10 questions to find out if you are, in fact, a card-carrying nerd. The first question is, I break into your house this afternoon. How many desktops do I find there?
Well, you have trouble breaking through our house because we have a Belgian Malinois.
A dog would stop you at the door.
So we're actually free of desktops. We're now, you know, pure laptops and the occasional docking station. There's not a single desktop in the house anymore.
That's the correct answer. And how many cell phones have you personally bought in the last year?
I've personally bought two, but they've been for my kids. I've actually kept my single cell phone.
It still counts. And do you have a personal Twitter feed? Yes.
Yes, Harry Greenspun.
Do you have a personal blog?
So I have a blog that I do through Deloitte pretty regularly. And again, it's the deloitte.com/Center for Health Solutions.
Good. And do you use any personal online backup services?
I do. I use SOS Online Backup, though I take so many photographs, I'm actually exceeding my sort of the consumer limit. I've got to find a bigger provider.
Got to get a bigger boat. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have a Deloitte-issued Apple iPhone.
Hmm.
And I have an accessory battery pack, I must say, because I can't get through the day without the battery being drained.
And how many apps have you used on that phone in the last 30 days?
In the last 30 days, I've used at least 40 apps. My newest one is Gate Guru, because I travel so much, as you mentioned, that I got to figure out where some food in airports I don't go to very often.
Gate Guru. So let's say I break into your house and I distract the dog. How many tablet devices will I find there?
You'll find three tablets.
Three?
We've got a pair of Kindles and an iPad that I won.
That's good. Good to know. What social networking sites are you active in?
So I'm very active in Facebook. So Facebook is me as a person. I use LinkedIn as a way of just really giving out my contact information. It's kind of the same way that I give out my business card. And as you mentioned, very active in Twitter professionally. So what you'll find very often is the stuff that put out is around interesting articles that come out, or other important memes, or other important facts coming out. I have a lot of help. I have my colleague Caitlin Mason, who's here with me in the studio, who's been instrumental in identifying really good content.
Well, I don't want to brag, but it's almost like a tasting menu. You know, you go to a buffet and you go, I don't want this. I feel like salad. I don't feel like this. And it's a tasting menu of topics. So if you just want to read about ICD-10, I can go to your Twitter feed and I can scoop the last 2 months of ICD-10icles that I know that you have given your imprimatur, your Nihil Abstat, and said, no, this is worth reading. Why should I waste my time? If Dr. Harry Greenspan says it's worth reading, then I'm going to read it. I mean, it's an easy way to save time.
Well, you know, philosophically, the thing is like, you know, I'm supposed to know about a lot of stuff. And so I have to read a lot of things. And so, you know, use Twitter as a way of saying, look, this is the kind of stuff that I would be reading to find out about things. And, you know, it's rare that it's an actual, you know, it's rare that it's a tweet that doesn't have a link to something to get more information. I don't think there's much you can say with 140 characters.
That's best practice, by the way. And the last question, last book you read was paper or electronic?
Last book was paper. It was.
Whoa! You're in big trouble now.
Well, you know, I mentioned the dog. Most of my reading these days is dog related. So the last one was about clicker training, and I think it was brain games for dogs. The dog is very, very intelligent. He requires a lot of mental stimulation. So we've got to find new ways to entertain the dog.
I'll have to run that through my UNIVAC computer. But you're doing so well up until the last one, and now the paper. I don't know. It's. I guess you can't find books on how to train dogs electronic. I don't know.
I should get credit for having a GPS tracker on the dog.
Oh, on the dog. Boy, yeah. You get nerd points. That should be one of my questions to ask. Does your dog have a GPS tracker? Because years ago, I never even asked about tablet computers at all. This is a sports studio. As you know, you see the hockey stuff, and they used to have a crystal ball in here, and I think the guys threw it at each other and they broke it. And I used to always hand it over to the guests and, okay, tell me exactly what's going to happen. Well, what is going to happen here in the next few years? I mean, we look at Google Glass, and some physicians actually can benefit from Google Glass. I read studies about that. What about mobile in the future and healthcare IT? Where do you see it heading?
Well, you know, what I always say is if you want to know what the future of healthcare is, look at the present day of every other industry. And I think we're going to see this gradual catching up of healthcare to other industries, whether it's retail or travel or finance. And we'll see the incorporation of a lot of these devices and technologies and the use of big data to really improve what we do. You know, wearables, Google Glass, a bunch of other things, I think we'll find an interesting role. I think in healthcare, what we'll see is that the healthcare enterprise is going to have to invite participants to start using these in healthcare, because I think there's a reluctance or concern about bringing some of these things into healthcare because it's a scary thing for a lot of people and want to make sure we're doing it safely and carefully.
Preventive medicine, obviously, I think that's that's where I'd put my money. I think that's the most bang for the buck. Do you think healthcare IT is going to move more aggressively in the area of preventive healthcare?
Well, no, we think about prevention and wellness, and, you know, prevention is very important. It's kind of thing that's very popular with people because it's the sort of thing that the healthcare industry does to them versus wellness. Wellness, what you do for yourself. And wellness, not so popular, right? Well, you know, prevention is getting a flu shot. Wellness is, you know, getting off your butt and going for a run or turning down dessert. So I think, you know, we're going to see health IT and the kind of things used in mobile to motivate people and use of social networks to really expand what we do in prevention and wellness. I think we'll also see it applied to some of our sickest patients for home monitoring and sort of hovering over people. They move from the hospital to the home for early warning signs and detection of early problems.
One of the articles that I read from your Twitter feed was about home care providers and mobile devices can actually give them more time in front of a patient, which you wouldn't, but actually healthcare IT used correctly can give a face-to-face person more time with a home care patient. That's incredible.
Yeah, well, you know, we've seen a couple things. One is that, you know, even for people having, primary care visits, emergency room visits, to do a teleconference for many people is more satisfying. They feel they have greater greater attention paid to them based on with their provider. The other thing you can do is change the dynamic of how care is delivered. You know, most people who are young and healthy don't need to go see a doctor. They need a guy in a tracksuit with a tablet to come to the house to go through the refrigerator and teach them how to stretch. I mean, that's... So we have an opportunity to really expand the notion of primary care and increase access to a lot of folks.
So is your business card going to say guy in a tracksuit from now on?
I got to dust off my tracksuit from the 80s.
It's interesting how this has all changed over the years. Drones. I'll just throw out drones. What do you think of drones? Any role in healthcare IT with drones?
Well, you know, having worked for Northrop Grumman years ago, I'm obviously a big fan of the unmanned aerial vehicle. I put an article about the four dimensions of mobile health, and we talk about people, we talk about the place, and we talk about the payment structure and the purpose. But one of the things we talk about in the place is that, you know, here we are in Washington, D.C., and in other countries and other parts of the world, we have great access to broadband. But you look in, you know, across this country, there are large swaths of our own country that really don't have access to broadband. And something the FCC pointed out long ago and with their rural broadband plan, saying that, you know, how do we, if we want to bring new technology to the rest of the country, we got to have broadband a lot of places. And around the globe, we see many countries as with the same issue.
I never thought of drones actually improving broadband delivery and healthcare in that sense, but it makes sense. Better than I think Google has a balloon approach. We'll see what happens in the future. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our special guest today was the world-traveling Dr. Harry Greenspun. We got him off an airplane for a half hour to sit in the studio here. He's a senior advisor for the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions. Thank you, Dr. Greenspun.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.